I'm joined by Nancy L. Johnston. She works in private practice in Lexington, Virginia. 42 years of clinical experience, American Mental Health Counselors Association, diplomat and clinical mental health specialist in substance abuse and co-occurring disorders. She offers skill-building trainings for recovery from codependent behaviors to the general public at her center in Lexington, Virginia. She has written a book, and that is in front of me, Disentangle When You've Lost Yourself in Someone Else. And that can be in many different shapes and forms and many different types. And Nancy tells a little bit of her own story in the book. She talks about three 20-year periods, and she's about the same age as I am. So it's almost, as I said, I have seen some differences in my life over the years. Some mistakes, the early years, and then my first marriage was kind of reminded me of your first marriage, Nancy. Actually, to tell you the truth, it was one of those things that you have tied yourself so tightly to someone else, and then you find that. That person doesn't find the same tightness and the same alignment, and you learn something as you go. But growth happens in many different ways, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and it happens every day, Steve, really. So, the book is about where our balance of focus of self and others gets off. I'm going to bring our listeners in real quick on that very, very general notion. The entanglements can come when we are so engaged in trying to please someone else, fix someone else, help someone else, care give, change, that our whole focus is outside of ourself. And so we stop listening to what do I need, how do I feel about this? What would I like to choose? And it's not a selfish thing. It's even on a radio show here, I'm gesturing with my hand. It's the balance scale. It's realizing that I need, that I haven't recovered myself. And so when you mentioned my first marriage, it not only was everything you said, but it was also realizing I married the person right out of when I finished college. He had been my high school sweetheart. As I was finishing college, I was realizing that it wasn't matching who I was and what my interests were. And Steve, here's the other external where I just went ahead because I couldn't disappoint a lot of other people. I couldn't disappoint my parents, all the people who thought the relationship was great. I was just very unable to, I asserted what I felt like was right. I did try once to not go forward, but myself wasn't strong enough or clear enough, and it just didn't want to upset other people.
You know, not upsetting other people. It occurred to me, and I've thought of this over the years, that, this grand marriage, this grand event that you have planned out, and somehow I think that a lot of people become obsessed with the marriage itself. And the fact is that I've invested all of this effort and all of these funds into making this be as perfect as can be. And you forget about the human side. You forget about the emotional side. You forget about the other needs, the other parts of you that you mentioned just now. And I think that is, it leads you to carry on and to move forward, even though you may have some doubts. I was sort of like the other side. I was obsessed with this. This was an important thing, and this was the obsession. But I didn't really examine I didn't really let myself examine the inner circle, the details, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And, Steve, everything I write about and say has a kindness and a self-respect at its core. And I think as I, you and I have already been talking about this, I think that we, I'm quoting a 12-step program right now, I think we did the best we could for who we were at the time. I think that our youthfulness, we are still learning to cultivate listening to ourselves and trusting ourselves and expressing ourselves. And depending on the family system we've been in, that may have been encouraged, it may have been discouraged, so we may be even more challenged to express, to connect with ourselves and express ourselves. So no fault to you or me. It's just part of the path we were on at that point in our lives.
And you know the thing that also occurs when something like that happens, and you are forced into, you're forced into being by yourself. You know, I think that's one thing. You're forced to be by yourself, and you get to learn a lot more, and you learn and you grow. And that is that's something that is priceless. It is a gift that you cannot imagine you will see or find when you have a situation that is ending. You forget that, hey, this is an opportunity for growth. You certainly don't see that at the beginning, do you?
No, no. We fear being, it's not unusual, again, in my practice, the common theme as a relationship is ending is that people fear they will be alone forever. And, of course, my business is not telling their future and knowing whether that will be true or not. My business is trying to help them be with what is at that time, which is just what you're saying.
And we live in very, very difficult times right at this moment when we're dealing with this coronavirus, and especially with the situation. I've used the term this past weekend, and I used it last week. I said, coronavirus fatigue.
Yes,
we have this situation where we have where we had this emergency situation that occurred in March, and
yes,
we hunkered down and we sort of said, okay, things are going to be better. Well, once we get to summer, the summer will sort, and that will change, and we'll be able to move beyond this, and things will open up, and things will. Well, yes and no, and we keep seeing this this pattern. It seems that we don't know. We know when it began. We just don't have any idea when it's going to end, do we?
No, we don't. And you know, I agree with the fatigue word. I'm now speaking about, and then I'm going to take it to how the book and my thoughts can be useful as we live with what is. But Nancy Johnston says we're in a second psychological phase of this now. This is only quoting myself. And that is, the first part did have some type of odd adventure feel to it. You know, we got to go home. We got to figure out how to get groceries. We've got to figure out how to do school. You know, there was some ways we were having to use energy, there it is, to figure things out. Now this next phase, words I have used are brittle, and I was talking to a dental office the other day, and they said, oh, it's tiresome, and that's what, you know, you're saying. And I think one of the things that makes it tiresome is my other word I'm using is regrouping. We have to keep regrouping because we are doing the best we can. We are finding our way day by day. So, but the regrouping, I think, is fatiguing. Regrouping is when you think the kids are mm-hmm. going to be at school, and now you find out they're going to be home, and it's going to be all virtual, you know, for a while. The regrouping is that I have a medical test on Friday, and I have to go on Wednesday, drive an hour for a COVID test before it. So we are just, there is constant regrouping. So, Steve, if I might, you know, as I've talked about how disentangle can apply in this COVID situation, and I call it living together, living closely indefinitely. That is my little subtitle for it, yes, living closely indefinitely. There are three things that I have, and I'll say them, introduce them, and you take it where you want. Celebrate together, honor separate, respect differences. So celebrate together, honor separate, and respect differences. I think if we can celebrate together means, well, we are all home every night for dinner now. We're not off at soccer fields and baseball fields and whatever. So could we, celebrate that we're all gathered around the table, whoever that is, in whatever construction of the household it is. Can we just celebrate that we're going to be together and we're going to watch yet another Netflix movie? But that we honor that this is an extraordinarily special time where we can intersect with each other. And it's probably not the time to sort out the major problems that we've never figured out before now. It's just the time to be together and really see each other and maybe get to know each other more.
And indeed, the book itself is about all of the different ways that we become entangled and the ways that we become part of someone else. Codependency seems to be the key word here in many of these situations, isn't it?
It is. It is, Steve. And it's certainly, I talk about codependency in the book. It's not dodging or working around that word. Two things. One of the things I have found over the 25 years of work I've done with this project, and this is the second edition of the book, is that loss of self seems to be a core dynamic in what we call codependence. And one of the things I've written from radio interviews is entanglements can come when we are not free to be ourself within a relationship. And that may be because of abuse, wanting control, feeling insecure. I have a bunch of things, but not feeling free to be ourselves within the relationship. And I feel like that is a core dynamic with codependence. So, you know, the book is really about recovering that self. And it highlights four areas of work, which are carefully laid out in a really detailed table of contents. And in order to recover ourselves, we want, one, to see the reality of our situation, face whatever illusions we may be having, two, learn to detach and be responsive, not reactive, and be able to see the situation more clearly. Three, it involves setting boundaries with ourselves and with others. And four, it has a spirituality domain that involves really learning how to live the serenity prayer of sorting what we can and cannot control and acting on what we can control, which is ourself.
And I think that there are so many different things that are also in this. One of the things that occurs to me is that I work with the Alzheimer's Association.
Okay.
And Alzheimer's is a terrible disease. But it is particularly terrible for your loved one, and particularly for the caretaker. And
yes,
that's the real key here. And that person trying to find themselves, that's a tough job.
It absolutely is. I spoke at a Valley Program for the Aging conference last fall on preventing caregiver burnout. And, Steve, I did use a lot of the material in the book for that particular workshop. We must prioritize how we can get a break for ourselves. And it could be 30 minutes. Please know I'm not talking about a week's vacation. If you can do that, that's outstanding. But some of this is working really small, meaning within a day, how can I have some help and time for myself? And it really requires digging. Often we're not the people who want to ask for help, and it requires asking for help. It may require seeing how the family can rally to pay for some extra help so that primary caregiver can restore themselves.
We also have a situation, even the most tragic situation, is we have people in nursing homes that you cannot go visit as they are dying.
It's very tragic. Yes, it absolutely is. And I feel for the family. I invite them to do whatever they need to do to at a distance honor the person, and at a distance allow their grief, allow those feelings that come up for them. And grief involves everything from denial to anger to depression and bargaining, and that'll take us to acceptance
there
of
is,
what is. Acceptance of what is.
There is so much more that we could talk about in terms of dealing with the book itself, but it is a wonderful book. It's Disentangle When You've Lost Yourself in Someone Else, and the circumstances can be many and varied, but
yes.
Again, finding yourself when you have lost that person, and finding out who you really are and what you really need and how to make that happen. All of that is in the book, Disentangle. Nancy L. Johnson, website for you would be what?
Is my name, nancyljohnston.com. And the Disentangle book has a Facebook page, so it's Facebook.com/Disentangle.
Disentangle. Nancy Johnston, thank you so much for joining me today.
Steve, thanks so much. I enjoyed it.